Appreciate the presence of each one tonight. We have a number of visitors, and we're glad that you're with us this evening. Hopefully, as we spend a few minutes in God's Word, it will help to remind and to strengthen us in His service. The Savior that we just sang about is worthy of our life service, and it's times like these that He designed that should help us as we go through the week to honor His name. We all recognize the importance of labeling and packaging. Men may go to the store to buy a tool. And if that tool has on it the brand name BAYR, and then they get to looking at the small print and it means buy at your risk. And then it has another little label on there saying, now this thing may blow up on you. I wonder how many people are going to buy that tool. Maybe there's another brand, and it has on it, good price, it just says cheaper brand. And then it may say, we guarantee this tool to last 2 months. How many people are going to buy that tool? Companies spend a lot of money for labeling, for packaging, for branding, because they know it's important in marketing, so much so that labels have trademarks. We're affected by labeling. If a man goes to a hardware store and he's going to buy a tool, here's a Black & Decker or here's a DeWalt. The DeWalt may be 30% more, 50% more. Why would he buy the DeWalt over the Black & Decker? Is it because of the paint? There's something about the labeling on it that says, well, I think this is a better tool. Very, very important in marketing and selling items is the packaging and labeling. But what man knows now, Satan knew all along. And he used it very early. Back in the Garden of Eden, Genesis 3, he had before him the purpose of seducing the man to sin and the woman to sin. Now you can imagine if Satan had come to the woman and said, I tell you what, I'd like to encourage you to engage in disobedience to God. And I'd like for you to show your distrust in God. I would like for you to exhibit your selfishness and pride. I wonder if she'd have bit. But while that was his appeal, he repackaged it. He relabeled it. Instead of saying, I want you to disobey God, he says, this food is nourishing. And his words were, it's good for food. And his appeal was, it's very satisfying to you. And the way he phrased that was, it's the light to the eyes. And then, to appeal to their minds, he said, it's very enlightening. He said, it's desired to make one wise. Well, that sounds pretty good, all right. And so, instead of disobedience, you want to nourish yourself, don't you? It's good for food. Instead of distress, look, it'll satisfy you. It'll bring joy to your soul. And instead of selfishness and pride, it's seeking for wisdom. And so, you know the rest of the story. She ate. Of course, he had already convinced her that the warning label on the package was faulty. Back in chapter 2 and verse 17, God had said, in the day you eat from it, you will surely die. But Satan crossed that out. He said, chapter 3, verse 4, you will not. You surely will not die. So just mark that out. That's an error in the labeling. But you know what the result was. It's that if you'll be like God, is what Satan promised. Instead of dying, you're going to be like God. We have announced people who are sick today. You have loved ones who die. And it's all because of Satan's successful relabeling, repackaging, so as to get the woman and the man to sin. Well, that's a long time ago. Let's go to 1 Peter chapter 4. We don't live in the Garden of Eden. We're not facing eating a certain kind of tree. But there are things that we deal with every day of our lives and are particularly before us this time of the year. And this passage deals with some things that pertain to that. 1 Peter chapter 4, I'm going to begin in verse 3, and then we're going to come back and look at verse 1 and 2 in just a minute. But I want to start in verse 3. He said, "The time already past is sufficient for you to have carried out the desire of the Gentiles." Now, these people were Gentiles. He's talking about the people in the world that do not know God, do not serve God. And then he says, "having pursued a course of," and this version says, "sensuality." You can readily see this has something to do with being sensual or sexual. The King James Version and the American Standard Version uses a word we don't use too much, lasciviousness. The New King James uses the word lewdness. And the New International Version uses the word debauchery. I don't care which one of those translations you pick, they're all ugly. They don't sound good. You don't want to be guilty of sensuality and lasciviousness and lewdness and debauchery. And the word itself was a word that referred to blatant sexuality, disregard for what people thought, for moral norms, that engage in it because they wanted to. Then there's another word that follows it. Now, this particular version translates it lust, L-U-S-T-S, lust. Word, again, we may not use too much. So the English Standard Version has translated it passions. Interestingly, the Young's literal version, and it is literal, it says desires. That doesn't sound too bad, does it? Desires? Don't we all have desires? But the desires or passions that he's talking about is connected with that first word. Desires and passions that are connected with sexual conduct and thought, with sensuality, with debauchery, with a lack of moral restraint. That's the kind of desires and passions that's in the context. And so it's talking about desires that either lead to the practices of the first word, encourage people to participate in them, are the desires and passions that arise out of that conduct. The touching, the dress, the pictures, the words, the activities between men and women, or men and men, or women and women, and the resulting stirring of the heart and passions that are involved with all of that. But those are ugly words, aren't they? Before we talk about repackaging, I want to look at another couple of verses. One is in Colossians chapter 3. Look over at Colossians chapter 3. So, Peter wrote to people who had been Gentiles. That is, they were Gentiles, but I mean, they'd come out of the world. Colossians is written to people like that as well. And they had lived that kind of lifestyle. And in Colossians chapter 3, verse 5, where he's encouraging them relative to a new life that they're living, first four verses, he said, "Consider the members of your earthly body as dead too." Now, this version uses the word immorality. So Some of the versions used to use the word fornication. The translators have changed that because a lot of people in our society don't know what fornication means. It's unlawful sexual activity between a man and a woman or a man and a man. Fornication. Immorality. Then there's impurity. And again, your version may translate that differently, but it's the conduct that is related to the first word that leads to it, that promotes it. It's short of it, but it leads to it. Again, could be touching, could be words, could be pictures, but it's associated with it. And then the third word is passion. Different word from 1 Peter, and yet same idea. Strong feelings about these things. Heart is stirred about these things, and it is. The fourth word, evil desire, has to do with intent and purpose. You want to be involved. It makes you feel good, and so you do things you know that will either stir your heart or others. Things that other people want to see or experience in the realm of sensuality. And then the last word tells how important this comes to be to people. He uses the word greed. When we read that word, we think of money. But this is not a money context. It's a word that has to do with priorities. It's a word that has to do with desiring something so bad it becomes our God. And you'll note the rest of the verse, which amounts to idolatry. It's the driving force. It's the deciding factor. But again, those are kind of ugly words. We don't want to be involved in immorality and impurity and passion and evil desire and sensual greed. One more passage. Look at Galatians 5 along this line. Look at Galatians 5. Here's three letters. One is written by Peter. Two written by Paul, all three to people who had lived in this kind of society, warning them about the conduct that they had once engaged in and that their neighbors engaged in, the people they went to school with, the people they worked with, maybe the people in their family. And here in Galatians chapter 5, verse 19, the deeds of the flesh are evident, which are, there's our word immorality or fornication. There's our word impurity. And the third word is that word that we started with in 1 Peter 4, sensuality. You can see how this is connected. That sensuality word in 1 Peter 4 is connected with sexual satisfaction outside of God's lawful realm of marriage and the things that lead to it and demonstrate it. You can see the kind of company it keeps, immorality, impurity. Now, devil's smart. So he relabels all of this activity, and he calls it a party. We're going to have a Christmas party. And at this Christmas party, we're going to have men dance with women who are not their wives. There's going to be some sensual touching, maybe even some kissing. We're going to have possibly some other activities that are designed to stir the passions. No telling how people will be dressed, designed to put emphasis on sensuality. What about drinking? We'll get to that in a minute. That's a little bit later in the text. But New Year's party or Christmas party or office party, that sounds pretty harmless, doesn't it? Am I saying that every New Year's party, every Christmas party is sinful? If you think that, you haven't been listening. Satan said this is good for food. This is the light to the eye that'll make you wise. He appealed to the idea of being nourished, being satisfied, and being enlightened. Is that in and of itself wrong? No. Having a good time together in a party, and it's not necessarily wrong, but when it becomes a cover for a relabeling, a repackaging to make the kind of things we've been reading about in these three passages, okay, then it's a different matter. You could call it a celebration. You could call it, this is a good word in our society, a dance. Is there something sinful in the word dance? No. No, there's not. I've got a little granddaughter. I love to watch her dance. Dance just means, generally, to jump and skip and twirl around. But it has a lot of connotations, and it becomes involved with sensuality. We'll talk about dancing maybe in another lesson at a later date if the Lord is willing. But call it a dance. That sounds a lot better than, we're going to have a sensual celebration. And we're going to do things that encourage people to violate their moral purity. Boys to sleep with girls and men to sleep with women that's not their wives. We'll just call it a dance. Or here we'll just say, we're going to have fun. Don't you believe in having fun? I do. Don't you? And so these evil, ugly things are relabeled and repackaged. Real popular this time of the year. Go back to 1 Peter 4. I said that there were some other things here in the text that are associated with it. And note, the association is not mine. The association is right here in the text. And these go hand in hand. Where you find one, you often find the other. In fact, one may lead to the other. These three things that we're reading about now often lead to the first two things that Peter lists. You have three words. One is drunkenness. This version translates drunkenness. The American Standard Version, remember this was translated in 1901, uses a word we don't use today. Wine bibbing. You say, what in the world is that? The King James Version says excess of wine. Well, what is that? Again, may not sound too bad, but what this word, if I understand it, and I went to try to find out from those who studied how the word was used, the scholars who looked at how the word was used in the first century when this was written. This is the down and out drunk. This is what we might call the gutter drunk. This is the wino. He's lost his senses. He's lost his self-control. He's so given to drinking. Drunkenness. Ugly, ugly picture. And when people are drunk, they do things that are shameful. They do things they don't even remember. And they may engage in sensuality. The kind of sensuality that if they were sober, they would not engage in. And they may give in to their lust and passions where otherwise they wouldn't, because when you take a drink, now I've never been a drinker, but I've talked to people who are members of this congregation who used to drink, who told me, you drink a beer, immediately it affects your inhibitions. I haven't been there. I'm telling you people who have been there. What if you drink two? What if you drink five? What if you drink hard liquor? Then you're opening the door for those first two things. You get drunk, that first word, there's nothing to stop you from participating in the first two things. But then there's a second of these three words, and you're going to find versions translate this differently, and that's the advantage of comparing versions. This version uses the word carousing. That's a word, again, while this is the New American Standard 95 edition. We don't use that word too much, I guess. The King James and American Standard Version translates it revelings. I'll say more about that in just a moment. And the English Standard Version, a later version, I thought it was really interesting the way they translated it. They translated it orgies. Now, if I understand these three words, you can go study it for yourself. You start out with drunkenness. That's the apex. That's the worst. Then you drop down a level. We're not that drunk. But this, I guess, what could be described as the wine, women, and song level of intoxication. The 49 bottles of beer on the wall. Let's have a good time. This is a great time. Maybe they're not totally drunk, like the gutter drunk, but they're definitely under the influence. And it doesn't have to be liquor. It can be drugs. That's very popular now in our society, and they often increase the power of their intoxicating beverages by adding different elements to make it more powerful. But that again is associated with the first two words. And then there's that third word. Now, if I'm right that you take three words, he's not saying the same thing in three words, is he? And so if all of them have to do with drinking. So if the first word is the down and out drunk, the second word is a step back from that. What about that third word? The third word in the text, this version translates, very interestingly, drinking parties. Drinking parties. The King James Version translates it banqueting. What? Is it wrong to go to a banquet? I found it really interesting. When I was studying this word, there's a commentator by the name of H.A.W. Meyer. He was an old German commentator, I think, in the 1800s. I don't agree with what Mr. Meyer says in a lot of places. He's certainly not my authority, but he did know something about the language. And the fact that he is so knowledgeable in the language is evident in the fact that even Thayer's Lexicon and other such works refer to H.A.W. Meyer. He said this about that word, chiefly applied to drinking at the banquet. That's not a gospel preacher saying that. That's this German commentator telling you something about the word that was used. Now I understand why the King James translated it. Banqueting. Drinking at the banquet. There's another fellow who's known for his study of words. He's got classic works out. His name is Trench, T-R-E-N-C-H. He not only studied words, he studied synonyms, words that were very similar in meaning. And he would study all the documents and say, these words are similar, but this one has this shade of meaning. Very, very useful source. He said of this word, quote, not of necessarily excessive, that is drinking, not necessarily excessive, but giving opportunity for excess, unquote. Now, he's not sitting in a Church of Christ trying to convince people that social drinking is wrong. He's just talking about the meaning of the word. But my question is, would this third word cover what we call social drinking? And if you say no, are you sure? Would you want to be a participant in it? So you got drunkenness, then you got the second level, and then you got this word. And so you can go study the words for yourself. But I'll tell you what, drunkenness and carousing and drinking parties, and one version translates it drinking bouts, New English translation, that's all ugly. Let's rephrase it. I'll tell you what we'll call it. We'll call it Mardi Gras. That sounds pretty good, doesn't it? We'll just have a lot of fun. We'll wear necklaces. And by the way, do you know what the necklaces mean? If you don't, go look it up. It's associated with those first two words. Women who have had those necklaces and went and found out what they mean were appalled. But be as it may, they're associated. But Mardi Gras, it's a fun time, ain't it? No, there's drinking, dancing, carousing, and a lot of other stuff. Speaking again, we can always just call it a party. I tell you what, let's call it a special party. Let's call it a prom night party. Can anybody object to prom night? When young people are graduating from high school and celebrating their graduation, what about a little drink? What about a little sensuality that goes with it? Because young people that start drinking, their moral inhibitions are immediately lowered. A lot of young people that go to prom night parties lose their virginity that night. But prom night, that sounds pretty innocent. Well, we can again use the New Year's party label or the Xmas party label. You know what the newspaper calls it? I tell you what, just watch your news and, well, probably tomorrow through the next week. If you look at the news, whether you look at it on your tablet or whether you look at it on a, yeah, they still print newspapers. I know some of the young people don't know what that is, but they do. And they'll talk about revelings. There's going to be revelings New Year's Eve night. Well, I'll tell you what it is. Just go read 1 Peter chapter 4, and that's what he's talking about. There's going to be drinking and dancing and carousing and sensuality. There'll be some drunkenness. Revelings. Well, that sounds like a party atmosphere to me. Who doesn't want to participate? Well, I'll tell you who doesn't want to participate. Let's back up. We said we were going to go back up to verse 1. Let's do that now. Therefore, since Christ has suffered in the flesh, arm yourselves with the same, this verse says, the same purpose. We said that there's advantage in comparing versions. The King James, American Standard, and New King James says the same mind. The English Standard Version says way of thinking. What way of thinking? It's one Christ had. What is it? If I understand the text, and I may not, but if I understand the text, it's the martyrdom spirit. When Christ was born, we talked about this morning, he was born to die. He knew he was going to die. He knew he was going to go to the cross. But he was ready. Whatever it took to accomplish his mission and serve God, he was ready. Now he says, arm yourselves with the same mind. Same way of thinking. For, or because, he who suffered in the flesh. Now, when it was talking about Christ suffering in the flesh, he was crucified. Well, that can't mean that here. It says, who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin. Well, yeah, I guess so. If you're dead, you're not going to sin anymore. Who has suffered in the flesh, the one that has that mindset. I'm going to serve God. That's my most important purpose in life. And if I have to die to the world and all that it offers, so be it. Whatever I've got to suffer to do the will of God. Am I correct? Look at the next verse. At least we're in the neighborhood. Look at the next verse. So as to live the rest of the time in the flesh, no longer for the lust of men. What is the lust of man? No longer live for what you want to do and what your friends want to do and what your family wants to do, but for the will of God. That's Christ's attitude. He came to do the will of God. He says, arm yourselves. Here is armor. That there's no party. There's no celebration. There's no activity that's worth sacrificing doing the will of God. That's my first concern. Okay, we read this in 1 Peter 4, but didn't Jesus talk about that same thing? Look at Matthew chapter 5. Different terminology, but isn't it the same idea? Look at Matthew chapter 5. You're very familiar with this sermon that Jesus preached and what He said here in verse 13. He's preaching to a multitude of people, focusing on His disciples, by the way. And He said, "You're the salt of the earth," verse 13. "But if the salt has become tasteless, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything." What is salt good for? Isn't it for influencing the things around it? If you've lost any good influence in this world, what use are you? If you're just like they are and talk like they are and dress like they do, look at the next analogy. You're the light of the world. This would be very valuable to the disciples, the apostles, because they were going to be challenged. They were going to suffer. You're the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor does anyone light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. What are you talking about, Jesus? Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see what? A little sensuality? A little debauchery? A little drinking? No. See your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. We have young people in our audience. You're going to have opportunity as you get older to attend these kind of parties, to be engaged in these kind of activities. Here's what I want you to think about. When people look at you, young people, do they say, "That's a Christian"? Isn't that wonderful? Look how holy they are. They may say, "That's a Christian, all right," but with a sense of sarcasm. Will you, being at these kind of parties, whether young people or older people, with your co-workers, glorify your God who is in heaven? Will it? Lights in the world. Turn to Ephesians 5. Similar exhortation, different language. Look at Ephesians chapter 5. Interesting, as we start in verse 3, some of the same things we've been talking about in these other letters. But immorality, verse 3, or any impurity, or greed. There's three of the words we talked about already. But look what he says about it. Must not even be named among you. There should be no hint of it. None. People ought not have to wonder, you know what? People come sit in this building and sing songs and eat that bread and drink that fruit of the vine, and you go look at their Facebook page. You look at what they got on or don't have on. And you look at the parties they go to. You look at the things they put on there. He says, that kind of stuff should not even be named among you. Why? As is proper among what? Saints. What's a saint? You've been set apart for God. That's where we were reading in 1 Peter 4, wasn't it? That I live for the will of God. Look at the next verse. There must be no filthiness and silly talk or coarse jesting. We all act silly at times. We make jokes. This is sensual type stuff, sexual type stuff, suggestive type stuff. He said, look at verse 4, they're not fitting. They're not fitting. In verse 3, he said it's not proper. What's proper for people who have given themselves to the will of God? Christ came to destroy sin. What's proper for people that wear His name? What's fitting? You go on to continue reading. He says, yes, you know with certainty that no immoral or impure person or covetous man is an idolater or has an inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and of God. Let no one deceive you with empty words. The devil's been doing it since the Garden of Eden. And he was trying to do it with Christians. Don't let anybody deceive you. For because of these things, the wrath of God comes on the sons of disobedience. Therefore, do not be partakers with them. These people came out of the world. What happens when they go back to work? They're going to be around it. What happens when they go get with their family again? They're going to be around it. What happens when the young people go back to school? They're going to be around it. But he said, don't be partakers with them. For you were formerly darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. Look at verse 10. Trying to learn what is pleasing to who? Well, if we ask that question about every party, every engagement, every celebration, everything we put in our mouth, every show that we watch on TV, every movie we go to, is this pleasing to the Lord? Trying to know what's pleasing to the Lord. Do not participate in the unfruitful deeds of darkness, but instead even expose them, for it's disgraceful to speak of the things which are done by them in secret. Now go back to 1 Peter 4. Say, well, if I do that, if I live that way, I don't engage in the things everybody else does at school or my friends or my family, boy, am I going to be ostracized. I'm going to get it. Yeah, probably. Verse 4, he said, in all this, they're surprised that you do not run with them into the same excess of dissipation, and they malign you. Oh, they'll say all kinds of things about you. Oh, you think you're better than everybody else. Oh, you're Mr. or Mrs. Goody Two-Shoes, right? Oh, you think you never make any mistake. You bigot. You're just a prude. Oh, there's all kind of words they think about. Don't worry about it. Peter said that would happen a long time ago. He told these Christians they'd face that. But look at verse 5. But these people that do that to you, they're going to give an account to him who's ready to judge the living and the dead. They're going to give an account, but what if you succumb? Will you give an account? Let me finish with Galatians 5. Galatians 5. Is it interesting that in letter after letter after letter to Christians, you say, why am I preaching a lesson like this to a church on a Sunday night? Galatians, Ephesians, Colossians, Peter's letters, over and over, there are these warnings, these exhortations. Appropriate. Here's a letter to the Galatians, chapter 5. He talks about these things we just mentioned, immorality, impurity, sensuality in verse 19. Verse 21, he talks about drunkenness and carousing. Some of those other words we talked about in Peter. And he said, wait, he said, what about this? Well, he kind of covered the field with that next phrase. Did you notice that next phrase? He said, I don't know about those words. Well, look at that next phrase. And things like these. That's pretty broad. He said, of which I forewarn you, just as I forewarned you, that those who practice this thing will not inherit the kingdom of God. Let me tell you what, folks. When we go to give account, there will not be any repackaging. There will not be any relabeling. Immorality will be immorality. Sensuality will be sensuality. Drunkenness, carousing, drinking parties will be exactly that. There'll be no marketing with God. And we're going to give an account. And that's the challenge to you and me in an ungodly world, to live as is proper among saints, and strive to glorify God, and not let the festive season and the new year or any other special time in our lives lower our moral norms. We're going to sing the song that Keith has selected as a song of encouragement and invitation. What is that song, Keith? Are you washed in the blood? Appropriate for our study tonight. Are you washed in the blood? That's the only way to be free of the guilt of participation in those things. First, by having confessed the name of Christ and being buried in baptism. Then, should we fall prey to these temptations, getting on our knees, confessing our sins and turning from them and asking God's cleansing power through the blood of His Son. If we can assist you in that in some way, won't you let us know as we stand and sing.